the best way to start your sports weekend. This is the WILS Weekend Kickoff with Dave Benton on 1320 WILS.
Can you play that Abdelkader one again? Because that was money, and I think it kind of caught people off guard. But that was money. Play it again.
And now it's the other end. This could be a 3-on-1. Abdelkader in. Shot! He hit the crossbar! Rebounded to the near side and held in. 24 seconds to go in regulation. Kennedy. Kennedy looking. Center shot! And a score! They score!
I can't help but laugh and get goosebumps all at the same time when I hear it.
That one literally gives me chills because I was there. I was part of the band at that game. And for Abdelkader,
eat your heart out, yes. Gus Johnson. Honestly, do better than that. I challenge you because Gary Thorne is the master of that. Oh, my goodness. Welcome back. Weekend Kickoff 1320 WILS, streaming live at 1320WILS.com. You can become a fan of the show on Facebook, 13WILS Weekend Kickoff. Also follow us on Twitter, WILS Weekend Kick. Dave Benton here with Scott Eckersley, my co-host and producer. We decided during the break at some point in the next couple of weeks, we're going to get Gary Thorne on this show. We're going to do everything we can. We're going to get Gary Thorne on this show, and we're going to try and get him to do some hockey calls because I just can't beat it. But I want to talk a little Detroit Tigers right now. We haven't talked Tigers yet today. And if you remember last week, I made the announcement during the monologue at the beginning, we're 7 games into the baseball season. Let's give it a little bit before we get too upset with the Tigers, before we get too upset with what's going on with Albert Pujols and things of that nature. And lo and behold, the Detroit Tigers have now won 4 straight, 2 of which were against the hottest team in baseball, the Texas Rangers, 2 more on the road against Oakland. Scott, Tigers look pretty good to me. And the bottom line is, on this West Coast swing, if they end up 500 coming back home to take on the White Sox, I think they're in a pretty solid position to start this season.
Yeah, I said, I think it was last night or Thursday night, might have been. You know, if they win, obviously win last night puts them at 500, but more importantly, they'd win 2 series in a row, or they can split now with the A's, I believe. But that win against the Rangers, winning that series, as much as I don't like to say you don't get much momentum this early, that was really big to kind of
walk-offs like that?
Right, and to kind of swing things into the right direction and get the feel of, okay, this is where we need to be. Now, I don't think the Tigers are going to go on any huge runs.
No.
I think they'll be right around 500.
4-game win streaks is probably what we're going to see out of them.
What I do really like, though, is against Oakland, I figured, you know, Oakland is known for defense and for pitching, so it's going to be tough to come by runs, and it has been until extra innings, apparently, for the Tigers. But to see them, to go up against the Rangers and win 2 of 3 there, and 4 in a row is good no matter when, and they did need it right now.
The best thing I saw as far as confidence builders go over the last couple of games has been the starting pitching of Rick Porcello and Phil Koch, 2 guys who needed good outings. And I'm not saying they're going to pitch like that the rest of the year. They're going to have off days. Let's face it, all starting pitchers have off days. Justin Verlander is going to have some off days this year. It just happens. Okay, but to see that Porcello and Phil Koch can have outings like they've had against Oakland is a lot of promise to this team, because that was the big question mark. How is the rotation going to do day in and day out? Outside of Scherzer and Verlander, what do the Detroit Tigers have? And I think this is showing that although they're not going to have it every single time out, Porcello and Koch are going to give you, more often than not, an opportunity to win the ballgame. And that, to me, is the most promising thing about this recent 4-game winning streak.
So, with that being said, what do you expect or what do you want from those two, from Porcello and Koch, every time out, average?
If Koch gives me 3 runs in 6 innings, 3 runs in 5 innings, somewhere along there, I think that's fine. Porcello, I expect a little bit more from. Porcello, I would like to see 6 to 7 innings out of, 2 runs. Porcello's biggest problem right now is he's got a little bit of a Jeremy Bonderman syndrome, where he's sort of allowing a lot of guys on base early on. And that's not a situation. I mean, he did it again yesterday. Loaded the bases early on. You don't want to get yourself in that situation, because that's how you mess with your confidence, and that's how you put your team out of the running of the game early on. You don't even give your team a chance to get through the lineup once. And so Porcello needs to jump out of that. Koch, I don't expect much from anyway. If Coke gets 10 wins this year and has an ERA in the fours, I'll be impressed. It'll be more than I thought they were going to get out of Phil Coke. Porcello, to me, his ceiling is higher, and it needs to be higher. Now, Brad Penny, getting about what I expected out of Brad Penny. Okay, he's going to go 5 innings, 6 max. He's probably going to give up 4 or 5 runs in that time. They're going to have to score runs when Brad Penny pitches. They are. But just like we talked about, pitchers are going to have bad outings. Brad Penny every once in a while is going to give you 7, 8 innings of good pitching. So, you know, Penny more than anything at this point just needs to keep giving them 90 pitches a game before they have to pull him out. He has to be an innings eater at this point so the bullpen doesn't get overtired, especially in situations like this where the Tigers keep going to extra innings and keep having to go into that bullpen. Because at some point, they need Penny and they need somebody else to have a couple of strong outings so we can give the bullpen a rest.
That's the great thing about Justin Verlander, where you can just put him out there.
You know,
and
you're going to get 7.
Yeah.
Most times you're going to get 8.
Yeah, he can throw 120. And the thing with him, it's so surprising because a strikeout pitcher normally throws a lot of pitches, but he can still strike out 7 and do it in 100 pitches, which is rare. But yeah, watching him, he took the loss. He gave up 2 runs, but pitched a complete game. That is huge.
Yep.
And that's something that doesn't show up in the box score, in the scorecard, or when you look at the final. Oh, it's not a complete game win shutout, but a complete game. When you still get the loss, that is equally as big.
Yeah, it's still. What did I say at the beginning of the season of the players that they lost? Who did I say the Tigers were going to miss most of all?
Zach Minor.
And why did I say that?
Because you need an extra starter.
You need to eat innings. That's it. Zach Minor's not a great pitcher. He was never going to be a great pitcher. But Zach Minor can eat innings for you. And as silly as that sounds, but you need to play good baseball even when you're getting blown out. And you can't just keep going to the bullpen when you're down 10, 11, nothing. You got to have one guy that kind of can keep you sort of in the game, but at the same time, if he gets shelled, you really don't care. He's just trying to keep everybody rested.
And that kind of goes into one of your notes you had on was if you think Valverde can keep it up through the entire season. That's the biggest thing with the bullpen is they're good right now. Like Benoit gave up his first run just a couple games ago. And
overall, he's been good, though.
Right. And Valverde, let me check out his stats here. I mean, it's not bad.
He hasn't blown a save yet.
Right. His ERA is actually 0 in 6 games. So that's as good as it gets.
But that's how it was at the beginning of the year last year, too. And so the question that I pose is, can Valverde do it over an entire season? If they're going to have a lot of close games like this, Valverde is going to have to be solid all year long. And in fact, if they're going to keep having close games like this, if Valverde was impressive, he could get save numbers in the 50s. If he is converting his saves, he could get 50 saves this year.
I'm willing to say Valverde blows under 7 saves this season.
If he blows 5 saves, I would be happy with that.
Yeah, that's about what I'd like to be brave enough to say he'll only blow 5, like that'd be the top, but I think 7 gives me just a little bit more wiggle room.
You know what's crazy? If you talk about that, and we're saying, you know, if he blows 5 saves, it'd be a fantastic thing. 10 years ago, if a closer blew 3 saves, you said to yourself, God, this guy sucks. I was watching a Colorado Rockies game, and they're talking about Houston Street coming in. They're like, well, he only blew 5 of 25 save opportunities last year. Only blew 5 of 25 save opportunities. Really? We're considering that a good stat now?
Well, look around the league.
I know.
The bullpens everywhere are just getting shelled.
There is no Eric Gagne, Mariano Rivera, Jonathan Papelbon in his prime type of closer.
Rivera.
You know what I mean, though?
Yes, I
know. There is nothing like that. The depth in closers is not nearly what it used to be. And I think part of that is that we take guys that could have been closers and we're trying to turn them into starters. I use Jabba Chamberlain as a great example. I think Jabba Chamberlain could have been a great closer with the Yankees, but they tried to stretch him into a starter, and this is what you get. And I think a lot of people are doing that with their young pitchers where they're saying, this guy's got great stuff. I think we should try and turn him into a starter. Now, the other issue, I think, is that people are realizing it's really not that difficult to ask a pitcher to pitch one inning with nobody on base and not give up any runs. And so would you, and this goes along that Moneyball argument of, would you rather have your best reliever pitching in the seventh inning with two guys on and you holding a one-run lead, or would you rather have that guy pitching in the ninth with nobody on? And the philosophy, if you think about it, every time out of the gate should be, I want that guy in the seventh to get me out of that inning.
Yes, in theory, that is exactly how you want it. You want the best matchup. You want it. That's the most important time to bring in a guy, and that's why you see the people who will pitch to just one batter. You have your lefty specialist or your righty specialist who has just a sick curve or a sick slider that is the one out pitch. And that's the one thing I've never, when I was a pitcher, trust me, it wasn't at a high level, and I was not a reliever. I didn't have it. I didn't have the stuff, but the mentality that you have to be a little crazy. Like, you go look at Brian Wilson.
You have to be a John Rocker.
Yeah, exactly. You do. I mean, look at Brian Wilson for the Giants. Dude is messed up in the head. I mean, listen to any interview he's ever done. It's highly entertaining.
Yes.
But he is not quite all there. And you kind of have to have that mentality because you're on your own. It is all on you at that point. But you're right. In theory, ninth inning rolls around. There's not going to be anybody on base. You're coming in. You just have to throw that one inning. You can give it your all. You're not necessarily going to be up against the 3, 4, 5 hitters. You might be there. And it's not, it's got a lot more pressure, but in the same sense, it doesn't have as much pressure as the starter.
Now, all this being said, I think the most valuable thing to have in baseball, I really do. And I'm not just saying this to cause conversation or anything. I really do believe this. If you have an 8-9 relievers, like a save guy or setup man and a save man that you know are not going to get hit, which the Tigers could have this year. We'll see once we get to Memorial Day and things like that how things are shaping up. But if you know that if you get to the eighth inning with the lead, you're not losing that game, to me there's nothing more valuable in baseball than that. There really isn't. And if you look at World Series teams over the last decade, pretty much all of them have that, is once you get to the eighth, you're not getting on base, let alone scoring another run.
That's why beginning of the season, not just the Boston Red Sox lineup, but what they did for the back of that bullpen, I mean, that's why lots of people love them. The Yankees are actually performing the way people thought they would with Rafael Soriano
yes.
Setting up Mariano. I go back to the All-Star game, I think 3 years ago, the AL had it perfectly. They brought in, I think, Papelbon
yep.
in the seventh, Joe Nathan in the eighth,
and then
Mariano Rivera.
Yep.
That was the ultimate there.
Exactly. And you know what? The Twins used to have that when they had Crane, and then going into Joe Nathan, they had that as well, where you just said, all right, this game's probably over. At this point, there's an intimidation factor to it where, and that's the thing with closers too. Look at a guy like Brad Lidge. Brad Lidge, when he was with the Astros before he started blowing saves, people were scared to face Brad Lidge. That slider of his, they just couldn't hit. Now, once he started getting hit, he lost that intimidation.
Once he hung it to Albert Pujols, lost it, yeah.
Correct. And you see a lot of closers lose it because it's really an intimidation factor. It's kind of like in tennis. Look at Leighton Hewitt. When Leighton Hewitt was number one in the world, no one could beat him. Why? Because he was number one in the world, and everybody knew it. And they mentally, you sat there and you were playing, and if you started losing to the number one player, you said, crap, I'm screwed. It's going on with Roger Federer right now. Once they lose that, once people realize that they're beatable, that there is a strategy out there to beat that person, the intimidation factor is gone, and you start thinking about how you can beat them rather than how you are going to not lose that poorly against them.
Well, think about the Yankees. When you go into the top of the ninth in Yankee Stadium, Enter Sandman comes on, you know Moe's
coming out.
Unless
it's the Red Sox who have faced him so much that they know what they're getting out of him.
Right, and not to say that Mariano Rivera's stuff isn't great. I mean, that cutter is unbelievable, but it's not just that, but you hear that you've known for so many years that he is the best closer in history. And, I mean, imagine for any young guy coming up, they hear that. They see him just walk in and stand up on the mound.
Eric Gagne had that same feeling when he was with the Dodgers. When Gagne was getting 60 saves a year, he was not blowing any of those saves. It was 60 for 61 types of save opportunities. And it's because you are intimidated and you say to yourself, I'm not getting a hit off this guy. It's just not happening. And I think the Tigers could end up having that this year with Benoit and Valverde. I really do. They need to show me more, and Valverde has got to show me he can stay consistent for the whole year. But it's shaping up so far, and we're very early on, that once they get to the eighth inning, if their starters can get them to the eighth, Tigers could be in good shape. All right, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more Red Wings, and then we've got plenty of Michigan football to talk in the final hour. Dave Curtis from Sporting News, also Angelique Chingelis will be with us from the Detroit News. We'll talk all about the Michigan spring game. It's Weekend Kickoff, 1320 WILS.